Hello, and welcome back to Minority Report's podcast and digital series. I'm your host, Mona Sheikh. Very excited to be finally back. I know the Rona, also known as the coronavirus, but I like to call it the Rona, has gotten and grounded everyone. So I am here at home taping this, our first, actually first episode from home, because not going to Vegas to the studios to tape this. So here I am. But today I'm very, very excited to have an incredible guest. She is just an absolutely fantastic stand-up comic. I've worked with her. She is, you know, you've seen her on Nickelodeon. She's been on Silicon Valley. And she's just a trailblazer. You've seen videos of her on Now This about racism that, you know, Asians are facing at the moment due to the coronavirus. I want to welcome you to my very, very funny friend, Helen Hong.
Do you see me?
Yay!
We did it!
Yes! Welcome, Helen Hong! How are
you, my friend? Hi! It only took, you know.
You know what? Not bad. We did, like, about 6 minutes. That's not, actually, 4 minutes. That's not bad at all.
I want you to know that I curled half of my hair and not this half. Because in the time of Rona, we do what we can.
This is the best. You don't understand. All I did was just curl this. The back is horrific.
Yeah. The back is just a matted knot. There's birds nesting in the back of my head right now. Listen. And I'm in my sister's closet.
I noticed. I was just going to ask you, which closet?
This is a washing machine that I'm leaning against. So I am quarantining with my sister who lives in San Francisco. She lives alone in a studio apartment, and I didn't really want to quarantine with my roommate. Like, I would rather be with my sister, and she was starting to go stir crazy by herself. So I brought my dog up to San Francisco, and we've been quarantining in her small studio apartment.
Amazing.
And you luckily, we get along well. But because she's still working too. She's doing all these video conferences. So she's in the dining room on her computer, and I'm in the closet talking to you.
I think you might be the only straight person I know who got in the closet.
Deep in the closet.
Deep in the closet. Listen, this is the time of the Ronas, man.
Everything goes weird.
Weird shit is happening.
How are you holding up in the time of the Rona, by the way?
You know, I live by myself in a one bedroom in the gayest part of LA, West Hollywood. And I have a 5-year-old pit bull that is getting very, I think she's getting sick of me because she's
she's like, when are you going back to work? Exactly. Let's talk about it.
She's like, when are you leaving? Because I need my space back. So you need to leave. So every time, like, every night she'll come by my bed and like shake her, wag her tail to be like, hey, can I jump in bed? Because before you used to work and you would let me in bed. And I'm like, nah, bitch, go to the couch. Head to the couch, bitch.
Like, this is too much quality time together. Like, too much.
I need my space. Like, yeah. I can't breathe. Like, you're suffocating me. Get out of here. It's too much.
I live with a 9-year-old husky German Shepherd mix.
Whoa.
And because it's springtime, he's blowing his winter coat. Whoa. So I basically live with two dogs. I live with the one dog and then enough fur to create another dog.
Oh my God.
Like, it's just fur all the time. And now because we're staying at my sister's studio apartment, it's just, we have the Roomba going like every single day, and the Roomba after an hour is like, I can't, take any more fur.
Listen, I think now you know how I feel, because this hair is everywhere.
That's a lot of hair.
It's so unattractive. I can't even tell you.
It's beautiful. You have this thick, luscious mane.
Yeah, but just here though, like everywhere else, you don't want that lush mane.
I'm East Asian, so I'm the opposite.
I envy you. You don't understand. Like,
I barely have hair on my head. Like, these eyebrows are drawn in.
You know what? I honestly, like, besides the eyebrows, I don't want hair anywhere else. I envy Asian people because they're like dolphins, like just smooth bodies, yeah. just smooth, you know?
Yeah, East Asian,
and we're like Chewbacca's over here. Fucking straight up Chewbacca-ing over here. It's ridiculous. I was telling somebody, I was doing this show with Ben Glebe and Steve Hofstetter a few days ago, last Sunday actually. And they were like, oh, you can do some Rona jokes. And I was like, okay. I was like, here's a Rona joke. I was like, before the pandemic, my bikini line looked like Vegas Strip, and now it looks like the Gaza Strip. It's fucking horrible. It is atrocious.
That's great. How are you adapting to doing stand-up over Zoom?
You know, it's a little challenging, but I've been doing these online shows for the past 5 weeks, and they've been doing really well. So we've been having a really good turnout. People love to tune in, but it's kind of strange because you don't get to hear people's laughter. You have to they type their reactions, or you have to read their reaction, and then like interact with the comedians. What about you? Have you done any of the online shows?
I have. I've done a handful, and at first the idea of it was like, oh, that sounds horrible. That sounds like the worst thing that could possibly happen. I'm like on the computer alone in the closet telling jokes to myself. Exactly. And but I actually did. So I've had a couple of different experiences. One where, like you said, they're just typing their reactions and you just see like the Instagram, like emojis popping up on the bottom. Right. So that's a little distracting. Like I can't talk and read. That's of right. people's comments at the same time. But I did one where it was a Zoom conference meeting and people were told you can keep your microphone open so that we could hear your laughter as long as you don't heckle or chat or anything, like just laugh or chuckle or whatever.
Yeah.
And we will have someone on standby to kick you out of the Zoom if you're disruptive. And that was really beautiful. It was really nice. Yeah, because people, you actually had to pause because people were laughing. Like there were like 130 people at this Zoom conference meeting.
Amazing.
And so you would hear laughter and you'd have to kind of pause to let the laughter die down. But it was really encouraging for sure.
Yeah. Because you know you're getting like, because we're used to getting that reaction in real time, you know, so that's what we're used to. I mean, now you've been killing it, you've been doing some great stuff. I want to talk about this this video that you released that was amazing about the racism that Asians are experiencing right now. And you know, can I just say, every time some crazy shit happens, it's always directed at some minority, right?
Yeah.
It's always directed. You know, we have school shootings, we have mass shootings all the time. Nobody's directing that shit to straight white guys. Nobody's like asking straight white guys to apologize for the other straight white guys. So, I want to talk about, like, you know, have you personally experienced some racism? Have you known people who are experiencing racism? And I want to also talk about talk to me about your video and how you came about doing it.
Yeah, well, luckily, I live in Los Angeles. My sister lives in San Francisco. They're, you know, two of the most Asian populated and progressive cities in the country. So thankfully, neither one of us has experienced anything. Although, you know, with social distancing, like, it's not like I've really, like who could even tell? I'm wearing a mask and sunglasses and a hat and the whole thing. Like, how would you even tell that I'm Asian?
Sure.
But my parents live in Boston, which I don't know if you know Boston, but it's notoriously racist.
Oh, yes.
Like Chris Rock called Boston like the Birmingham of the North because it's how racist it is.
And
it's true. Like if you, you know, like I watch Good Will Hunting and I hear that accent and I get PTSD because it's they have no problem like saying racial slurs.
Yeah.
But so my parents, when it was first ramping up and people were first starting to like hoard toilet paper and stuff like that, they went to Costco and they didn't wear their masks. And I was so mad at them. I was like, Mom, like you're 71 years old and you have a lung condition. Like, why would you go outside without wearing a mask? And she was like, people still aren't really wearing them. Like, it's not like everybody's wearing them. And I didn't want to get singled out as being an Asian person and get harassed. And I was like, that's so sad. Like my mom was willing to risk her physical health because she didn't want to get harassed for the race element. You know, like because she's an Asian woman wearing a mask in public, and like she thought people were going to say shit to her.
That's right.
And I was like, and then my dad, and I mentioned this in the piece that I did for Now This, my dad was like, do you think that I should buy a gun in case something happens? And there has been an uptick of Asian Americans buying firearms.
Yes.
Because there have been physical attacks, more and more physical attacks against Asian Americans and Asians all over the world
for
being Asian.
That's right.
And I feel like the coronavirus has taken away a very thinly veiled racism. Like if you were racist before, coronavirus gave you an excuse to really expose your racism. Like it became almost like acceptable.
Ugh,
those dirty Chinese people
put
us into this mess. Like they made this disease and
And you know, it doesn't help, right? It doesn't help when the president of the country is coming out and calling it Wuhan virus or Chinese virus.
Or
he was making fun of it. He was calling it Kung Flu. Like, fuck you. Like, do you understand the impact of your words?
You know, and I did address that in my video where I said it's not helping. Like, it's not only the president. A lot of GOP senators and politicians have taken the cue from the president been like calling it the Chinese virus. I think there was a senator that was like, all the major diseases have come from China, SARS, MERS, swine flu. And he mentioned swine flu, which started in North Carolina. And I was like, okay, way to like thinly veil your racism. Like, when swine flu was going around, which started on a pig farm in North Carolina, nobody was rounding up North Carolinians and like being harassing North Carolinians. So I just think this is an excuse for stupid people to be racist.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, like that acid attack in Brooklyn really shocked me. Like this guy was waiting for this woman. He knew where she lived. He waited outside of her door until she came out and dumped acid on her. And I was like,
When was this?
This was like a couple of weeks before I did my video. So maybe 4 weeks ago or five
and
weeks
she was
ago.
An Asian, she's an Asian woman. And
she
the guy
was an Asian
white.
Woman in Brooklyn, New York.
And where's is the guy white? Like, what is he? Is a white dude?
He was also wearing a mask. Like, that's the thing. It's such cowardice. You know what I mean? Like, this guy didn't have the balls to go up to this woman and say something to her face. He was hiding in a corner like a little brat, like a little baby, like holding a vat of acid and like dumped it on her hand and then ran away. I'm like, you fucking pussy.
Pussy. Yeah, 100%. Did they catch this asshole?
No, they had CCTV footage of it, but it was dark and the guy was wearing a mask and a baseball cap. Of course, these people, like, they're too thin-skinned to show their faces.
Of course they are. Of course they are. I mean, you know, I just think, like, you know, it just reminds me of when September 11th happened and, you know, being Muslim and, you know, the kind of backlash that Muslims were facing and, you know, I was facing, my family was facing. You know, it was really bad. Like, and it's crazy because right before September 11th, back in when 2000 had just rolled around, it was like October of like 2000, literally a year before September 11th, my mom and my brother were at JFK Airport. I have four older brothers. So two of my brothers went to drop my mom off because she was going back to Pakistan to, you know, to because she lived there in Pakistan with my dad. And while they were going in, everybody was like rushing in. Long story short, the two security guards who worked for the airline, one took a massive blade out and cut my mom's face open.
A security guard
that was hired by the airline cut my mom's face open, and as my brother like leaped to like protect my mom, the guy took my brother, put him against the wall and stabbed him in like five different places, and my brother was just laying there bleeding, and the cops came running and started cuffing my brother while he's laying there bleeding almost at the verge of death, and my mom's holding her face, blood gushing out of her face. And then people were like, no, you don't understand, it's not him, it's the two security guards who just dropped the blade and ran off. And then they had to go and catch the guys. And they were these two guys were racist as as fuck. Like, they didn't want to see, like, brown people fucking rushing in. And he just picked his victim, and it happened to me, my mom, and my brother. And that case dragged on. My mom had to get plastic surgery. I mean, it was just so bad. They had to literally take my brother's entire intestines out and check him for internal bleeding because the way he was stabbed. And I remember seeing my brother, and he was just covered in blood, and he had all these tubes going in his body. I remember seeing my mom. I thought that my mom had left because I used to live in New York City at the time, and my family lived in Jersey. So I thought, oh, my mom, I knew my mom was leaving. So I thought, oh, my mom must have left already. So when my other brother called me, and he's like, you need to rush to the Jamaica Hospital, which is where, you know, JFK is. And I'm rushed to the hospital. So I'm thinking my mom's left already. And all of a sudden this ER nurse walks up to me, and she's holding a chart, and it has my mom's name on it. And I was like, wait, what? I was like, can you show me where this patient is? They're like, oh yeah, she's behind that curtain. And I opened the curtain, and my mom was lying there, and all her clothes had to be cut open because she was drenched in blood, and her face was sliced open. Yeah. Yeah.
Mona.
And
you know what?
Yeah. 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 That's the level of hate crime I'm talking about.
I mean, I think, you know, the saddest part is for you and I, because we are Asian. We're the last wave of immigrants, so we're always considered not American.
That's right.
You know,
that's
we're right. Always considered other. We're always considered those people. We're never accepted as true Americans. Like,
yeah.
You know, you and I and our families, we've been here for years and years and years. Like, my whole family, like, my parents, like, became naturalized citizens. My dad is like the most patriotic person in the States. For decades, he only bought American cars. So I learned how to drive on a Ford. Like, my dad would only drive Fords.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear that. I'm so sorry to hear that. A Ford?
Yeah. Yeah. A Caravan.
I
learned how to drive on a Dodge. It was a Dodge Caravan. Oh. That's how I, but my dad only ever drove Fords and Chevys and Dodge cars, and he would fly, like, to this day he flies giant American flags on his wherever he lives, like every residence, he'll fly a giant American flag out the door. My dad, because he's a naturalized citizen, I feel like he's more patriotic because he came from a country where he didn't have the freedoms and the opportunities that he has here.
That's right.
And he's achieved the American dream, and he's so thankful, and he's such a gung-ho American. And for my dad to not be seen as American is so painful to me because, like, what American do you know only buys Fords and Chevys and Dodges?
That's correct.
You know?
That's correct.
Like, it's just, like, his actions speak louder than his words. Like, he's so patriotic and has such a love for this country. And yet, because of our appearance,
that's right,
and because my parents have an accent, like, they're never considered American.
That's right. You know, and then that's interesting. You said that, like, you, and I love the fact that you're, you know, like, look, I'm a naturalized citizen, right? I'm not born and raised here. I was born and raised in Pakistan. I moved when I was 15. You know, you're born and raised here. I wasn't. I'm an immigrant. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not even first generation. I'm a straight up immigrant. And the thing is that my mom became a naturalized citizen. And, you know, and it's like, whenever she refers to America, she always says, well, white people's country. She doesn't even think it belongs to anybody else. She's like, yeah, white people's country. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. You are an American too. She's like, yeah, but I'm naturalized, so I'm not really an American. You know, it almost feels like she apologizes for her existence on an American island, on American soil. You know, it's just like, there's like the sense of like, we're just here. I don't want to bother you. I hope I'm not bothering you. And it's like, fuck that. Like, you know, we work hard. We immigrants are so hardworking. We grind our asses. You know,
we pay our taxes and don't take as many services drawn from those taxes. And those are facts.
That is absolutely correct. You know, the richest minorities in America are Asians. Richest minorities. I would say, like, South Asians are maybe a little bit more new kids on the block than Asians are. But, I mean, my God, we haven't been here that long to be the richest minority. Like, that says something about our work ethic.
Yeah.
That says
something hardworking, about tax paying. We never draw unemployment. We never draw social services. Those are just, like, hard statistics.
That's right. So, we don't live in a trailer. We don't have trailers to live in. We don't eat mayonnaise sandwiches.
We don't claim disability.
We don't like to bang our cousins or our sisters. Like, that's just not a thing. Like, we don't do that shit, you know? I mean, I just feel like we always have to constantly prove our Americanness.
That's
how American are you? How American are you? Or do you really love this country? I remember doing the show in Nevada about 2 years ago. And it was a veterans afternoon. It was like a Sunday afternoon show. And I was the opening act. And I go up and I'm doing my thing. And I was like, oh, give it up for the veterans. And, you know, thank you for your service. And this one guy in the back goes, he's like, liar. He's like, you don't care about the veterans. He goes, you're not really an American. Mm-hmm. Screaming out to me. So I was like, you know what? I was like, can you turn the lights back on and put the spotlight on this guy? Because I want to see his fucking face, you know? And the moment I said that, he like backed off. He got quiet. I'm like, what's the matter? I was like, you ain't got your, you know, fucking tongue in your mouth now? I was like, let's fucking hear it. And I was like, how many people here want this guy to shut the fuck up? And everybody started clapping. I'm like, great, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, that's the thing is those people just, they don't have the balls to like get called out.
Yep.
Like racists usually are very thin-skinned babies.
Yes. That's right.
They don't have the balls to like go up to your face and say anything.
Or if they do, they have acid and while they covered their face with fucking hats on and shit, you know? Do you feel like when you perform, have you experienced like, you know, even before, you know, Corona, have you experienced what people are like, you know, trying to make racial comments or saying you're not American enough? Like,
yeah, of course. All the time. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm a touring comedian. I was a touring comedian. Sure. And so I've performed all over the country and in little racist pockets and even not in the racist pockets, like even in LA and New York, people will say like whack shit to you.
That's right.
But people will always, there's always an inference of like, wow, your English is so good. I'll do jokes making fun of Asian stereotypes, like, you know, being good at math and being good at laundry and stuff like that. And people won't get the irony of the joke that I'm telling, you know, they'll be like, yeah, it's true. Like, it's weird that you're not good at math or something, you know? Wow. And so a lot of people are racist and a lot of people don't know Asian people.
Yes.
They legitimately don't.
Yes.
Like, I've had people come up to me and just randomly being like, you know what? My daughter's friend in college is Chinese. And I'll be like, okay. And they think I'm supposed to have some profound moment with the fact that their daughter's friend in college is Chinese. Meanwhile, I'm not Chinese. And I'm like,
that's right. You're Korean. It's like, no, you're Asians.
Yeah, that's one of the jokes that I've been doing about the coronavirus, the racism against Asians, is like, not only are we being blamed for the coronavirus, but we're also being tasked with teaching the rest of America that not all Asians are Chinese.
That is correct.
Like,
that is correct.
There's like more than one Asian country.
Exactly. Exactly.
We're not all Chinese.
It's not Chinese countries or like Mexican countries, like one of the Fox News anchors was saying. They were like the Mexican countries. I'm like, okay, wow, you guys have really went off the deep end over here. Wow. And if I hear from one person that there's Chinese countries, I'm gonna lose my shit. Okay. I'm gonna be like,
that's one of the old tropes, right? Like, what kind of Chinese are you? I'm Korean.
Right. People always tell me, they're like, what kind of Middle Eastern are you? I'm like, I'm not Middle Eastern. I'm South Asian. Well, isn't that the same thing? No, it's fucking not. You failed geography,
like,
didn't you?
Like, give me a map. It's like a different part of the world.
Yeah, there's a whole continent called Asia. And there is no continent called the Middle East. There's literally no continent.
It's just
the Middle of East. That's the name of the thing. It's just, it's freaking ridiculous. So you have, now you did Silicon Valley. You did Nickelodeon. What do you have any other shows that you worked on before the Rona hit? What have you done?
Yeah. I was a recurring character on a great show on CBS called The Unicorn. Okay. I'm on a great little show, like a teen, not a teen, like a family show on Netflix right now called The Expanding Universe of Ashley Garcia.
Okay.
We shot a horror Netflix movie called The Babysitter 2, which is coming out, I think, at Halloween on Netflix.
What was your role in it?
My role in the horror movie was the principal of the school, because it's a like a teen horror flick. So the main characters are all in high school, and I played like the enthusiastic high school principal, where I'm like, say hello to our new student. Like,
listen, I was stoked. That's amazing. I was thinking it was going to be a principal or a teacher or a math teacher or something to that effect. Yeah. Like somewhere around that.
I played quite a few principals. I played quite a few teachers. Yeah. I played a phlebotomist once, which is someone who draws blood.
Okay.
I've only played one doctor, believe it or not.
Really? Yeah, those roles are for us. Those roles are more for like the brown people.
Right.
Yeah. Those roles. And that brings me to so I've been thinking about like the stereotypes that are there on TV, on film or TV for like Asians and for South Asians and for Middle East. What would you say are like the most stereotypical roles for Asian, for Asian artists?
Medical profession, for sure.
I
own two lab coats, Mona, and those are just for auditions. Two.
I have one.
I bought one, and then I played. I have played a doctor more than once. I played a role for True TV.
Yeah.
No, for Pop TV, I played a doctor, and they had to make a doctor's lab coat. They actually put my name on it.
Oh, wow.
And then at the end, they were like, here, do you want to keep this? And I was like, sure. So I own two. But that's how often.
It says your real name, though. It says your Helen Hong.
Yeah, it says Helen Hong. So it says like obstetrician or something.
Wow.
So yeah, I have that.
You can always like make that your dating profile picture. I think that's a great dating profile because, you know, we're expected to be like doctors and engineers.
I know. This is the thing that's driving us crazy, right? It's like technology. And I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm the Asian that knows nothing about tech.
That makes two of us. We're both Asian.
We went into the arts. Okay. That's the kind of Asian we are. We are artistic Asians. This tech shit, this is not our bag.
I think the term you're looking for is disappointing Asians. Is the word.
Disappointment to our parents, most certainly.
This is hardcore disappointment. How are your parents now with you? Like now they're seeing your success, like you're killing it with like all the TV shows and stuff. Like, was it challenging for them in the beginning to be like, oh, you know, I don't know, maybe you shouldn't do that. Like,
for sure.
What was that like for you?
Absolutely. Well, you know, my parents are Korean Americans and they didn't even know what stand-up comedy was. When I first doing it, they were just like, what even is that? Because stand-up comedy is only now making its way to Korea. Like, it was not an art form back then at all. So they had no idea what it was. They didn't know. And so they were like, they were confused. They were super trepidatious. They were like, wait, you're going to like leave your good job to do this weird thing that we don't even understand. Yeah. But my parents are like, for being Korean, they're pretty liberal. I think because they've been in this country for so long, like decades and decades, that they've chilled out a lot. And so they are very supportive now. And I think they've gotten supportive because of the type of success that I've gotten. Because not only am I acting on TV, but also I do an NPR show regularly called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah.
And so, and I do like, I do a countdown show on CNN once a year. And so they get really excited. They're like, our friends have seen you on CNN and our friends have heard you on NPR. So it's more like respectable media outlets.
Yeah.
So they're definitely very proud. Like every time they hear me on NPR, they're very proud. And they're like, aww, we don't understand a word you're saying, but.
because of what? Because of the language barrier?
Because the language barrier, yeah. Because they're both, you know, they both moved to this country when they were in their 30s. Sure. And so their English is not that great. My mom's English particularly is not that strong. And, you know, to understand comedy, you do need to have a strong grasp of the language. Like, my 100%. Dad can watch, like, the nightly news on a network and understand, but to understand the nuances of a joke is a little tougher for him.
Right, because you also have to know the references, because when you make the references and they don't know, they're like, I don't know why that's funny.
Right.
You know? They don't they don't understand
And also humor is completely different. Like, my dad will sometimes come up to me like, oh, Helen, I have this amazing joke for you. And he'll say some completely random thing that's like, and then the dog went outside. I don't understand why that is funny, but he thinks so. I think the sense of humor is also quite different.
Yeah.
So they don't understand, like, when I do NPR, and they'll hear me say a joke, and the crowd will laugh, and they're like, "We have no idea why they're laughing."
Wow! Wow! because they don't understand that. My mom has the same thing. Like, my mom, the craziest thing is that whenever my mom spends time with me, her English gets really good. Because I don't let her speak at home in Urdu, which is our mother tongue.
Yeah.
So I don't let her speak. I'm like, nope, you're not allowed to speak that language here. I was like, you're only allowed to speak English. That's it.
Wow.
You have to talk to me in English. You have to watch news. You have to read the newspaper. Like, I give her homework. Like, I am the parent that I'm just like, no, you're getting homework today. Here's your homework.
Wow.
Yeah, I need you to read the story. I need you to break it down. I need you to tell me what's happening in the story.
Well, you know what's really funny about my parents? My mother's English is not that strong, but she'll speak to me exclusively in Korean, and I will answer her back exclusively in English.
But so
yes, which she gets. Like, so her comprehension is very high. So both of us have a very high comprehension in the other language, but have a much lower ability to communicate, like to speak. So, like, my Korean comprehension is pretty high. I can understand a lot, but if I had to actually express thoughts in Korean, it's a little shaky. Same for my mom.
You know, that's so interesting. A few months ago, I got asked out on a date by this Persian guy. So he goes to me, where do you want to go on a date? And I was like, I like swear I live on Korean barbecue, because I must have been Korean in my past life, because anything Korean I want, like anything, I'll do anything, you know? So, and he was like, great. He was like, oh, he's like, that's so funny you said that. He was like, oh, I'll surprise you when we get there. I'm like, okay. So I show up, we sit down, and we're about to place an order, and he's fluent in Korean.
What? This Persian guy?
Persian guy. Fluent.
How?
So I'm like, I just look at it, and I'm like, what the? So the server comes, and the server's like, wait, what? Like, even the servers are like, wait, what now? And he's fluent in Persian, fluent in Korean. So I'm like, dude, what the fuck is going on right now? He's like, oh, funny story. I lived in Korea for 10 years. I was a TV actor there, and I became fluent in Korean. So then everybody around us is watching us, and they're like, oh, I know that guy from TV, because he's been on, like, Korean TV.
Wow.
And he's like fluent in Korean, and all the servers now who are not even dedicated to our table are now coming over and speaking Korean to him, because he's a celebrity. He's a Korean celebrity.
You went on a date with a Korean celebrity
who was not even Korean.
That's so funny. It's funny that you say that, because this is a weird phenomenon that happens in Asia, where if you are not Asian, and you come to the country and you looked distinctly non-Asian, so white, black, Middle Eastern, like brown, any sort of non-Asian, you can go to Asia and be a TV star if you can speak even a little bit of the language, because, you know, East Asian cultures like Korea, Japan, China, they're so homogenous.
Yeah.
They don't have any racial diversity. Mm-hmm. So the only people in Korea who are not ethnically Korean, there's, like, you know, you could count probably 0.5%. It's 0.5%. And so if you're a black guy or a white guy or a brown guy in Korea, you're like, like just walking down the street, they're like, whoa, there's one. There's one over there. And if you can speak even a little bit of a language, they're like mind blown. Wow. They're like, oh my God, a black guy is speaking Korean. And you know, people will go up to, and I know this because I taught English in Korea for a year and I had white friends who people would go up to them and be like, hi, I'm a TV producer. And I would really like for you to be in this commercial if you can say these five words.
Wow.
Because you're white and you're so distinctive looking.
Yeah.
And so I believe it. I believe that that Persian guy, if he could speak even a little bit of language, they were like, we want to put you in movies.
Oh, dude, he made so much money.
Yeah.
He was like, I made so much money. He's like, I got treated like a king. He was like, I just had the best time. And he went to Korea for an engineering job.
Yeah.
And got pulled in to come and audition for this role.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that happens. Like, people will go there for English teaching jobs or engineering jobs, and people will just stop them on the street and go, I'm a casting director. I would love for you to come in and audition for this. Because there's only, like, 10 black people and 20 white people and 30 brown people there. And so anytime you see one, it's like, whoa.
Yeah. You know, that's so funny you said that. So Pakistan has its own level. Pakistan has, like, we have a lot of Afghanis and, you know, which is not very different. But Afghanis are like, they look very different than us. They're blonde hair, green eyes, blue eyes. And you're just like, whoa, are you a white person? And they're like, no, I speak Dari and I'm Afghani. And you're like, oh, that's amazing. But we have a massive Chinese population in Pakistan. Massive.
Wow, why?
Because China is our neighboring country. So we just have a huge influx of Chinese that come into Pakistan. And so you'll be like talking to a Chinese person and they'll just be speaking fluent Urdu with you. Like, it's nothing. They just speak. So like in our building, like the apartment that I, the flat that I was born and raised in Pakistan, our neighbors was Mrs. Liu. That's her name, the Mrs. Liu. So her son Sean and I were the same age. So I grew up next to a Chinese family, and that was our diversity that we grew up with. Yeah, and so
there's none of that in Korea, because Korea is bordered by North Korea, which is bordered by China.
Right.
And then the rest of South Korea is a peninsula, and over here is Japan.
Okay.
So there's nobody that is not East Asian, nowhere near anything.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, in Pakistan, it's very interesting. We have a saying in Pakistan, because the Chinese are, you know, considered very, very smart and, you know, incredibly business savvy. So we have a saying in Pakistan that the Chinese come to Pakistan on bicycles and leave in Mercedes-Benzes because they do so well. Because Chinese food is considered exotic, very high-end food in Pakistan.
Mm.
You know, I mean, like, Chinese food here is like, oh, Chinese food is like, you know, like kind of like junk food in the sense.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But in Pakistan, it's considered very, very high-end. Like, some of the most high-end restaurants are Chinese restaurants. Yeah, because Chinese food is considered very, like, oh my God, like very, you know, very fancy. Like,
posh. Ooh,
very posh. Very posh. Like Mr. Chow in Beverly Hills. That's the level that it's considered.
Ah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and everybody's like dying to learn how to cook Chinese food. Like all the big chefs are like, let me teach you how to make this Chinese dish. Like, it's a really big thing. Like, the day my mom would make Chinese food, it's like, oh my God, something amazing happened today.
Like, what are we celebrating?
What are we celebrating? And then you come to America and you're like, oh, it's not fancy? It's not fancy. That's crazy.
It's not even Chinese.
It's not even Chinese. Not in the slightest. You're just like,
even Chinese. Like, dude, General Tso, not a person.
No, that is not even a thing. Like, that General Tso is the equivalent of chicken tikka masala. That's not even a real thing. We don't have chicken tikka masala in India and Pakistan. That's not a thing. That's a Western invention, like chicken tikka masala. But
that's right.
I am obsessed with, like, anything Korean. What do you think that is about, Helen? What is that about for me?
I find it interesting myself that Korean cinema and, like, K-pop, like, is kind of taking over the world, and I find it very fascinating. Korea is a really interesting culture. I often call Korea the, like, I call Koreans the Sicilians of Asia. Like, we're hot tempered, and when we go hard, we go hard. So, like, we don't half-ass anything. Like, if we're fighting, we're fucking coming to kill you. Like, like if you hear your Korean neighbor and they're in a domestic dispute, watch out. Like, there's going to be frying pans flying and, like, fists flying and knives coming out. Like, Koreans don't do half-assed anything. And so if you decide you want to be a K-pop star, you're, like, learning the dance moves and you're learning to sing and you're like rehearsing for hours and hours. You're going to dance until your knees buckle and you're going to sing until your throat starts bleeding. And if you decided you're going to be a film director, you're going to, like, watch every film that was ever made and you're going to read every film book. And, like, Koreans are just very hard. They go hard.
They're very passionate people.
Very passionate and, like, it's so funny when I hear stereotypes about Asians being, like, quiet and reserved and, like, not very emotional. I'm like,
clearly haven't met Koreans.
Go meet some Koreans. Like, go drink with Koreans. First of all, drinking with Koreans is, like, automatically you're getting shit faced. Like, there's not having, like, one or two drinks with Korean. You're going hard in the paint and you're, like, ordering a full bottle of soju and then three bottles of vodka and you are downing and you're drinking until you are blacked out. So, like, that Koreans are just not, we're not reserved. We don't do things half-assed. Like, if we decide we're going for something, it's, like, on.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like a cultural thing that you're taught. You're just like, if you do something, you do it all the way. Otherwise, don't fucking do it. You know?
And it's something in the, I think even it is cultural, but I think it's something in the DNA of the culture because I don't know. Like, it's just like, here's an interesting weird little tidbit of information. Like, I don't know a single Korean male who has not been in a fist fight.
What? Including your dad?
Oh, my dad has his nose is permanently messed up because of a huge fist fight he got into when he was 19, where they broke his nose in three places. It didn't set right. So he has breathing problems and he has sleep apnea because of this permanent broken nose that he suffered when he was 19.
Whoa. So is it just guys or is it women also?
I mean, women, no, women is like, you know, women are women. So it's like, sure, there's hair pulling and there's definitely people who are people slapping around, but, like, let's do this.
Listen, that's one thing that never comes off with us is
the weave.
There is no weave. There is no weave. With our hair. It's legit hair. My cousin is making hair for Beyonce as we speak right now. Okay.
Girl, I have clip-in extensions that are definitely Indian or Pakistani.
Oh, yeah, 100%. The best hair.
The best hair. The best hair.
But just on the rest of the body, just not so attractive. But just on the head, it's great. Just on the head. Thank you. Stunning.
Did you ever see that Chris Rock Good Hair documentary?
You know what? I've seen parts of it. I've never watched the whole thing, and I'm dying to watch the whole thing.
There's a part where they talk about... they will have hair, like, poachers go to India and they'll go to a temple where girls are praying and they're, like, prostrate, like, and they'll sneak up behind them and cut their hair and then go running off, like, while they're praying, and they'll just sneak up behind them and then run off. And I was like, what?
That's crazy.
You gotta watch it.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? That's gonna be on the list today. It's definitely interesting.
In fact, of course, the Koreans are the bad guys in that documentary because we're the bad guys with the black people, because there's a lot of hair businesses that are owned by Korean business owners. So, like, you know, this was famous in the LA riots. A lot of Korean people will go into a predominantly black or Hispanic neighborhood and start a business because they see a a need that's not being met. Like they'll see a niche where it's like, okay, this black neighborhood doesn't really have any stores. So I'm going to go in and like start a store. Or this black neighborhood doesn't have a lot of hair shops. So we see an opportunity. We're going to go in there and open up a hair shop. So, you know, it's kind of like the two bottom rungs of society trying to eke out a living, right? So it's like recent immigrants, Korean immigrants who are like, we want to own a business. We don't have a lot of capital. We can only pay X amount in rent. What can we do? We can open up a store in a very bad neighborhood.
Sure.
In a very economically depressed neighborhood. Sure. And then the black neighborhood is like, we don't have any businesses serving us because nobody gives a shit about us because we're black and poor. And then, you know, so then a lot of cultural like
tension
will happen.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Where black people will be like, these motherfucking Koreans are coming and exploiting us and taking our money. And they are accusing us of stealing and they'll follow us around the store because they think we're going to steal shit or, you know, and there have been horrible instances where, you know, young black kids will go in and like shoplift something and the Korean store owner will shoot them with a gun. There have been horrible, tragic instances like that. But that's what happens when, you know, when two very depressed economic groups are kind of grinding up against each other.
That's right.
So in the documentary, it points out a lot of Korean hair shop owners who are exploiting these black neighborhoods. But it's because they themselves are economically depressed and they're trying to eke out a living in the only way they can, which is to go into a depressed neighborhood and try to make a business.
Yeah. So. I mean, you know, that's interesting you said that because I think Indians and Pakistanis also experienced that. I mean, you know, we were like these super poor immigrants when we came here and we grew up next to the projects in Jersey City. And our neighborhood was, you know, predominantly black and Hispanic. Like that's what we grew up in.
Yeah.
You know,
I spent part of my childhood in Flatbush, Brooklyn, when it was not bougie. Like Flatbush, Brooklyn now is quite nice.
Oh yeah, for sure. Jersey
but
City
when I was a kid, it was a bad neighborhood. But because that's what we could afford.
That's correct. I mean, I know there was an incident that happened. This Indian guys who owned this gas station, which is, you know, the stereotype for a lot of Indians and Pakistanis owning gas station. And I think there was an incident, I forget where it was. I forget it was either down south or I forget Midwest somewhere. And this black woman that was there, and apparently the guys claimed that she wasn't paying for something or she was complaining about something and she kept yelling and screaming at them. And the Indian guy came out from behind and beat the shit out of her. Like he pulled her hair and like beat, and they caught it on video, and it was so bad. And the and it's predominantly black, and they were like, "Dude, we're gonna burn your fucking thing down."
Yeah,
you know. I mean, it's exactly what you just said. It's like the bottom rung, like two poor, you know, economically depressed races who are like grinding up against each other.
And
it's survival. It's just survival. Yeah. You know, and they're just trying
to. That's right. I mean, that's what happened with the LA riots. That's why so many Korean businesses were burnt to the ground. Is people, when people started rioting and there was just so much simmering tension and so much anger, you know, there was so much resentment from the black community against these Korean business owners that they saw were coming into our neighborhood and like exploiting us. Yeah. That a lot of Korean businesses were burnt to the ground in the LA riots.
Not to put you on the spot. Do you feel like is that exploitation from your, like, as a Korean person, from your point of view, do you feel like that's exploitation? What do you think that is? Why do they feel that way?
I mean, on the one hand, if your neighborhood is not being serviced by people within your own group. So if you live in a predominantly black neighborhood and black store owners or black businesses are not coming in to service your neighborhood, then your neighborhood's not being serviced.
That's right.
At all. Mm-hmm. Right. So if there's not one single bodega or store in your neighborhood at all, then you're not being serviced at all. So there has to be a service that comes in. And it's like I said with the Koreans go hard. They see this you know, this kind of not great opportunity. We're like, all right, well, we can open a shop. We can't afford to open a shop in West Hollywood. That's we right. can't afford to open a shop in Brentwood. We can afford to open a shop in Compton or Inglewood. Yeah. So we're going to try to do that. Right. And unfortunately, it's a lot of distrust and a lot of cultural ignorance towards each other. Yeah. So the Black people in that neighborhood will be like, what are these Asian people like coming out of nowhere? They don't even speak English.
Yeah.
And they're like acting like we're hella suspicious and they're following us around the store, like accusing us of stealing. And then these Asian, you know, and then the Korean business people are like, what are these Black people? Like, we don't even understand their culture and they're coming and being loud and like obnoxious. And, you know, it's just an unfortunate, it's like you said, it's two of the lowest rungs of society trying to eke out a living and just grinding up on each other.
Yep. Yep.
There's and always going to be tension when
it's just survival. People, you know,
it's I mean, if you're in the bottom rung of society, like it's every day is eking out a survival, and there's obviously going to be tension and there's going to be distrust and there's going to be ignorance.
Yeah, so. For sure. I mean, you know, when I went to high school in Jersey City and I was a new kid, I was a new kid. I mean, I started off in 11th grade. First of all, what a fucked up time to start high school. Like everybody has their groups, their friends, and you're this weird immigrant kid that comes out and they're just like, hey, hi, I'm an immigrant kid. I just got here from Pakistan and does anybody want to be friends with me? You know, and they're like, fuck off, you know?
Right.
At first, they thought that I was Hispanic. They thought I was Puerto Rican. so I was like, man.
It's because you have those amazing eyebrows.
I think it's the amazing eyebrows, and it's the hair. I think they were, like, thinking about the hair. And so my brothers taught me that if I have, you know, Hispanic kids approach me and start speaking Spanish, all I have to say is, no habla español. That's it. That's all I have to say. And I was like, oh, okay, I can say that. And then I, you know, all these like Puerto Rican or Dominican kids would walk up to me and they'd be like, you know, start speaking Spanish. And I was like, no habla español. They're like, you're not Puerto Rican? And I was like, no, I'm not Puerto Rican. I was like, I didn't even know there was such a thing as Puerto Rican. Like, I didn't even know there was such thing as Dominican. I didn't know anything about the Hispanic culture because Pakistan, you know, we just know, it's just, you just know white people. Maybe a handful of Black people and then just Asian people. There's no mentioning of Latinos. There's no mentioning of the Latino culture. We know nothing about the Latino culture. Yeah. So I got here and I was like, oh my God, this is, but some of my dearest friends were Puerto Rican and Ecuadorian. Those were my, you know, really cool, dear friends. And they would offer me weed and fuck, dude, I should have smoked that weed. I should have smoked it.
Yeah.
You know, and I did.
We should have in hindsight, we should have done way more drugs.
Way more drugs. But you know, I'm like trying to catch up. I've been smoking so much weed. I don't know what's the weed intake for you. I mean, I smoke weed every night. Mainly
you've been,
because
you've been doing the Rona. You've been getting through Rona high.
I've been getting, dude. I know it's Ramadan, and you know, but the tequila has been helping me like a lot. So the
I've been drunk every night. Yeah.
My sister. do you smoke weed? Like, what's your weed intake like?
I don't smoke weed. I will do CBD. I'll do some edibles once in a while.
Okay.
But I don't know. I feel like I never found that sweet spot where I'm like high to feeling good, but not too high that I'm paranoid.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're one of those people that gets paranoid.
I get really paranoid. Yeah, I get really high and then I'm like, what is happening?
So when you say paranoid, like what thoughts are going through your mind? Like, what are you thinking?
I used to smoke with like a boyfriend and I would think he would try to kill me. And I wouldn't act on it. I would just sit there like still and be like, is he trying to kill me?
Pre-high, did you have thoughts like that? Like pre-high?
No.
Like, I don't really trust this guy.
No, not at all.
Interesting.
And it wasn't even like a terror that he was trying to kill me. It was just like a fact, like, oh, I think he's trying to kill me.
Wow. Wow.
It was very matter of fact. Interesting. Like, I think he's trying to kill me.
But so you wasn't like, verbalize.
He's trying to kill me. It was just like, he's trying to kill me.
But you never would verbalize that to him.
No. Because I knew it was
part of the paranoia.
Just part of the paranoia. And then sometimes I'll smoke and I just get so high and I will sit there and I'll just think, I'm so high. I'm so high. And then at some point I'll be like, is this even fun? I'm not even sure.
Would you get like, this is, I mean, what do you smoke? Indica, sativa, hybrid? What are you smoking?
And maybe that's part of my problem is I don't know. These days I just smoke, like, if my roommate's smoking, I'll take a hit of whatever he's smoking. My roommate, who you know, Faraz.
Oh yeah, that's right. Faraz is your roommate. That's yeah. Right. Is he, yeah. Has he, did he go back to the Bay Area or has he been?
No, he's been quarantining at our place.
Okay.
And part of the reason why I'm here at my sister's is, all right, there was a point where his girlfriend was also quarantining at our place.
Got
and it. I did not want to quarantine with him and his girlfriend at our yeah. place. I just That's felt fair. Like it was a That's recipe fair. For disaster. So I was like, why don't you guys chill out here and I'll go hang out with my sister. So, that's nice. And that's been working out good.
That's awesome. That's very nice of you to, you know, give them their space and then you just head on. And speaking of relationships, are you now on dating? Are you dating? What's your love life looking like? I mean,
I'm dating a White Claw every night. A new White Claw every night is that's my lover.
Yeah. Are you on dating apps? Or are you like doing like?
I was on dating apps before the Rona.
Well, what about FaceTime? You can still FaceTime people and like.
Oh, come on, Mona. Mona, what is the point of dating except to?
I mean, yes, but
you can't do this.
People are gonna get really so mad at me right now. I've been taking chances. I've been like FaceTiming people. Yeah, no.
Mona with the Rona.
I'm doing great.
Mona with the Rona gamble.
Mona doesn't have the Rona because Mona does the FaceTime and then she like scans it and then asks them what their lifestyle has been like. And they're like, no, I stay home and I clean and da-da-da. I'm like, oh, okay. Because the thirst gets so real.
Yeah.
The thirst is so real right now.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm gonna stab somebody if I don't fix this. The weed ain't cutting it. All amount of porn is not cutting it. Like nothing is fixing this. Before I stab someone,
you're funny.
I must quench this thirst. So that's
I hear that. I
that's
hear
what's
that.
Happening.
I have been quenching my thirst with lots of potato chips and chocolate and petting my dog. Maybe my dog is a little sick of me cuddling, wanting to cuddle too much. I'm just like, come here, you. And he's like, ugh, stop.
You're like this thirsty bitch. Get away from him. He's like, I could smell the thirst. I can smell it. I mean, you know, you know, and I know, like, dating in Los Angeles is, like, not the easiest. It's horrible and it's awful. It's rough, man. It's freaking rough. But I just feel... I feel like, you know, whenever I meet people, whenever they leave LA, they immediately find a significant other. Like,
yes.
Immediately. They're getting married.
It's like, true.
Lovely humans. And
I think LA, when I lived in New York City, I thought New York was literally the worst city. And then I moved to LA and I was like, no, it's neck and neck.
No, I would say LA is worse than New York in dating.
I don't agree.
No? No?
No.
So what's your experience been like?
Well, you know, the sheer numbers in New York work against women.
It isn't like 8-1 or something like that?
There are literally, last time I checked, which is probably worse now, there were something like 100,000 more single straight women in New York, in the New York metro area, than single straight men.
What?
Like 100,000!
That's insane.
That's why so many of the men, the available men in New York, were dating like two or three women at the same time.
Because they can.
Because they can.
Because they can. Yeah, I mean, all the guys that I ever came across in New York they were either dating multiple women or they just had serious like commitment issues. Like,
yeah, because you have too many options. If you have too many options, then why settle down?
Yeah, but you know, the men that I experience in LA are, they, besides just the commitment issues, they want women that are like broken and want to be rescued and are like, you know, like the ASPCA commercials with the one
Sarah McLachlan.
Exactly.
For just $19.99 a month. You can save this soul.
Exactly, exactly. You can feed her. She lives with five roommates in a studio apartment. You know, just like, and then they meet me, and I'm like, I'm stand-up comic, you know, we're very verbal, and we're pretty opinionated. Baldy, we say our thing, you know, that's just part of the requirement. And they're just like, okay, you're, I literally had a guy tell me, he was just like, you need a guy who's going to put you in your place. And he was a guy from Norway. That motherfucker was a white immigrant. Okay? And he had the balls to tell me that I needed a man to put me in my place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was
Where's
like,
that man now? No, yeah, where?
No. Fuck that guy, first of all.
No, I feel like because we are female stand-up comedians, it's even worse because we're not shrinking violets. We're badass career women who speak our mind. We're very opinionated. We excel in a quality that is considered a very male quality, which is humor.
Yeah.
Is in our culture considered a very masculine quality.
That's right.
And
by the way, and that's a global thing. That's not just an
American. I think you're right.
Yeah, that's a global thing.
I think you're right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you ask any, you know, any woman what she wants in a man, she's like, oh, I want him to be funny. I want him to make me laugh. And then if you ask a man what they want in a woman, they say, I want her to have a good sense of humor, which means I want her to laugh at my jokes.
My jokes. That's exactly what
So I feel like we're at a little bit at a disadvantage. And so I think what we need in a man is someone who's so masculine and so confident in themselves.
Secure.
So secure, so confident that we are not a threat to them.
Yeah.
They don't feel threatened by us because I think the average man is threatened by us.
I think that guy is about, I'm thinking about 70, 75 years old right now.
Yeah, sadly. Because,
yeah, that guy's like, he's
break out the Viagra, girl.
He's about, you know, but he's got a retirement plan, and I appreciate that. You know, we're getting some ARP discounts, baby. Let's make this shit happen. You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just this constant struggle. But I think for me, it's also like, besides being a female stand-up comic, I think, and being in LA, which none of those factors help, I think for me, it's also this kind of additional thing about, I don't know about you. I don't know if you have a good like male role model, which I think you do because your dad's a really cool guy.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up with good male role models. So I never had that like, oh, this is what a good man looks like. I don't know what a good man looks like. I talk about this
in my act that I have very poor relationship role models because my parents never got along. My parents like actively disliked each other for a big portion of my childhood. And it's a very East Asian trait to not get divorced.
That's right.
You know, struggle through a marriage. So nobody in my family has been divorced. And
they're in miserable relationships.
Miserable relationships. Yeah. And so that for me was the template growing up of what relationships were like is like misery and hatred.
You're supposed to struggle in a relationship. You're supposed
And a marriage isn't about love. A marriage is a partnership, like almost like a business partnership.
That's right. It's a transaction.
Correct.
It's
so for me, I feel like that's it's not so much that I have a bad male role model. It's that I have very poor relationship role models.
I think I would probably rephrase that too. I mean, granted, I didn't have the greatest of relationship with my mother either. But I think for me, I just I mean, I think I recently made a post on Facebook about, I don't know if you know, but the domestic violence cases have went up a lot.
I know.
14 deaths have already happened where this guy beat the shit out of his wife and killed his kids and killed her. I mean, it's just really bad right now. The coronavirus has really spiked those numbers up. And, you know, and I made a post about that because I grew up in a very domestic violence household. Like my parents, my father used to like beat the living daylights out of my mom all the time. And he used to, my dad beat the shit out of me till I was 15. Like he would beat the living. 2 months before I moved to the U.S., my dad beat me so hard my earrings came flying out of my ears. That's how hard he hit me. And then when I moved out here, I have 4 older brothers. I'm the youngest and the only girl in the family. And my brothers would take turns beating the shit out of me. And it was really bad. That at one point I just had to call the cops. And, you know, and while I'm calling the cops, my brother's like calling my mom in Pakistan because that's where she was. And he's like, make her swear the Quran that she's not going to press charges against me. Like, it was really bad, you know. So the moment I turned 18, I was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. Like, it was just about self-preservation at that point.
Yeah,
it was just about self-preservation. And I feel like all like the LA part, the being a female stand-up cop part, then growing up with no like good male relationship role models, but it's like there are so many factors just working against me.
Yeah,
like, so much shit I gotta work through. I'm like you know what, I'm willing to be a fourth wife of a Saudi prince at this point. You know what I'm saying? Like, shit is so bad. I'm just like, I know I can't be third or second because I'm past the like 25 mark age. So that's fucking over for me. So I'll take anything at this point. I'm tired of playing bills with my, you know, like dick jokes on stage. Like, I'm tired. Like, I need help. I need help. You know, I mean, does Korean culture have like arranged marriage stuff or no?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
In the city or rural areas or what?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a practice that's dying out now because Korean culture has become so much westernized.
Yeah.
But even like my parents' generation, there was a lot of arranged marriages. My parents were not arranged, but they know people who were. And I still think if you come from a very traditional family, a very old school family, people are still doing that. And a very wealthy family. It seems like something that the people with money do to make sure their children get into the right family, you know, that kind of thing.
Right, but, transactional, right? Transactional. Like,
right, very transactional, transactional. But it's definitely dying out because the culture has become so much more westernized. Yeah. So I don't know anyone that's in an arranged marriage.
But you guys don't do cousin marriages either, right? You guys
no.
Yeah. No first, second, third, no cousins whatsoever. Yeah, some of us are fucking our cousins. Yeah.
That was never a thing in Korean culture. I think because the whole culture is so small anyway,
right,
that you're going to end up fucking your cousin by accident. That's why, like, if you don't know anything about Korean culture, there's literally like 5 last names. There's Kim, Lee, Park,
right.
Choi. Hong is actually a much smaller, like there's not that many Hongs.
Okay.
But Kims and Lees and Parks. Huge, huge swaths of the population. So the percentage of people that end up marrying someone with their own last name is very high.
Wow.
And the fact that you have your own last name means that at some point for a far back enough, you're from the same clan.
Oh wow!
Yeah, wow. So
you have the same.
It's all cousin
blood somehow. It's all cousin fucking. Got it.
It's you all cousin. You want to or not, there's cousin fucking.
We call it cousin fucking. You just call it just fucking. I understand that. Yeah, dude, sometimes I had 2 of my first cousins got married and everybody was like, ooh, we were like frowning upon it. We were like, we hope they get divorced. We hope they don't have kids because, you know, the whole deformities thing that comes up about fucking your first cousins and shit. And thank God they got divorced. And thank God then they went and like married other people and have like, you know, not so weird looking children. But you're just like, I know that some people sometimes like look at their hot cousin. You're like, I wish you weren't my cousin.
Yeah. I had a hot cousin when I was young where I was like, Yeah. But
was he a Hong too? Was he a Lee or a Park?
No.
Or?
He was on my mom's side, so he was a Lee.
He was a Lee. So, okay, would that be frowned upon if you guys had like hooked up or gotten together?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, cousin fucking is not, that is, it's not condoned.
Hashtag cousin fucking.
Cousin fucking is not, it is not a thing that one should do in Korean culture.
Mm-mm. Oh my God.
No.
Yeah, no, I, you know.
Oh my God, if we had ever hooked up, my parents, oh my God, it would have been drama. Ooh.
Really? Really? Ooh. Yeah. Wow. I know this Pakistani couple here, and I've known them for a while. When I just moved to LA, I became friends with them. And the wife had like, I'm not exaggerating, I think she had like 6 or 7 miscarriages. She just kept having miscarriages. And then she finally got pregnant. She had to be bed rest. You know, she had to be like, she was in, out of like 8 months out of the pregnancy, she was in bed. She couldn't move. She was, and she put on like, I'm not exaggerating, about 80 to 100 pounds. That's how much she put on because her body was just like going. And they finally had a healthy baby, like the baby was born and stuff. So then they came to visit us, and to me and my mom was living with me at the time. So they came to visit us, and we were talking, and then she was like, "Well, yeah, you know, Auntie so and so," and I was like, "Wait, I forget the lady's name." I was like, "Auntie so and so, isn't that his mother?" And she goes, "Oh." And I was like, wait, are you guys first cousins? And she's like, oh my God, can you like just not tell anybody that? She was like, can you not tell anybody that? Like, they had to like fudge their papers because the guy's born in American raised and they had the same last name. So they had to fudge the paperwork for her to come to America.
Well, now we know why she was having so many miscarriages.
Because
her body was like, yo, this is whack.
Yeah, exactly.
These are some bad genes.
Yeah, body was just like, cousin fucking no. No cousin fucking. Okay.
Mona, please. I gotta go. I gotta wrap up.
I know. I'm gonna wrap it up too. This has been so much fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
This was awesome. Where can we follow you?
At Funny Helen Hong, because some other bitch named Helen Hong has my shit.
Fuck that Helen Hong, all right?
She's not funny at all. So fuck on the that. Social medias, follow Funny Helen Hong. Don't follow at Helen Hong. No, Funny Helen Hong. And at some point, Funny Helen Hong will become at Helen Hong, and that's when you know I killed that bitch.
Yes, you did. Or you just made so much money, you bought it out. That's what you did. Some of that Netflix money. Do you have any online shows coming up where we can watch you? Or
you can see me if you have CBS All Access. You can see me on The Unicorn. If you have Netflix, you can see me on 2 series right now: Huge in France and The Expanding Universe of Ashley Garcia. And HBO right now is free. They're offering a free limited time membership, and you can watch me on Silicon Valley, the final season.
Awesome. 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 Helen, I adore you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Minus technical difficulties, we made it through.
We made it.
You're awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Bye. I'm signing off from the closet.
All right. Bye. Take care. That was our episode. Thank you so very much for joining us. Please don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find us at Minority Reports with a Z. You can follow us at Instagram at Minority Reports. Instagram is now changing, so it's Mona Shaikh Presents, which is my last name, Mona, S-H-A-I-K-H Presents. We are on Facebook at Minority Reports. And we have launched our weekly, every Friday, we have a comedy show that is at 8 p.m. And you can go on Minority Reports, minorityreportswithaz.com. And you can see all our future online shows that we have coming up. I will see you guys next time. Thank you so much for joining us.